This podcast takes you into the rarely discussed realm of the personal decisions leaders have taken that have influenced their business decisions and developed them into the leaders they are today. The refreshingly honest experiences of those who have been very successful provide an insight into the challenges they faced, the successes they achieved, and the people who influenced them along their journey. Here's our host, Mark Silvera.
Welcome to Business Made Personal. This podcast is brought to you by the insurance industry's leading education and events provider, ANZIF, via their Careers in Insurance initiative. I'm Mark Silvera. I've got with me today Kirk Populin. Now, Kirk is the Broking Director, Property and Casualty at International Brokerage WTW. Kirk has worked in financial services industry for over 15 years, and he started his career in financial planning in 2006. Since then, he has been predominantly involved in the general insurance sector. He has a Bachelor of Finance. He's got an Advanced Diploma of Financial Planning, which we'll talk about a bit later, my friend, and a Tier 1 in insurance broking. Welcome to Business Made Personal, Kirk.
Thank you for having me, Mark. It's an absolute pleasure to be here.
I will start with this question to everyone that's on the podcast. Give us a bit of your backstory before you started work, before you started, you know, earning money, those sorts of things. What was your life like?
Life was good with a very good upbringing. I've got two parents that immigrated from Italy. We're hard workers, but we were a small family, so we were quite family-oriented. But due to having a small family, I probably found myself being more social than others and wanting to have a fairly big friend network. Was always enjoyed other people's company and keeping myself busy, whether it through scholastic or academic functions or through sport. I always had to be on the go doing something and kept myself entertained, potentially due to the fact that I was brought up during the years that was a pretty tough time for my parents, in the sense that it was the recession that we all needed to have, and it was a tough time to have young kids and a big mortgage, and they found themselves working quite a bit. So there was a period of time where mum had two jobs, dad had three jobs, a couple on the weekend and then the usual one during the week. So having that sort of that friend network and things to keep me occupied and active was important at that time. But I also think that that probably gave me a fairly strong work ethic, just seeing how they went about it. Never had a moment where they felt that they were tired, or we never saw that anyway as kids, and they did whatever it took to look after us and try and give us a good life. So not that we ever did it tough or anything like that. It wasn't easy or bad, but I do think that that instilled a fairly strong work ethic in me, looking at both my parents and even grandparents who concreters and bricklayers and things like that from overseas. So never a moment where we felt like hard work wasn't a good thing. So heavily got into sports, again, very active lifestyle. I found myself being a little bit more advanced with numbers, finance. That part of school came easy to me, so I found myself gravitating towards that. And when it came to start considering an industry where I potentially might want to end up, did start to head towards the actuarial or finance or even banking sector. And that's what probably started me on that journey towards where I am today.
We'll get around to it a bit later, but I wanted to just go back to something you said. And your parents held two jobs and three jobs, which unfortunately is not that unusual for migrants coming into the country. I'm assuming they weren't around as much as you would have liked them to, because my parents were the same. How did that impact you? Did you feel that you had to grow up a bit quicker? Did you feel that, other kids were doing things that you weren't doing?
Look, from a growing up point of view, I still feel that, I was able to be a child in my childhood years, and I never felt that I went without, or that there was any neglect or anything. There was always someone there to, either my mum or dad, whether if they were ships in the night, so be it. But we always felt like we had them there. What it did mean, and this does impact the way I behave today, is that it meant that there was less quality time together. So we had our family times together, but there wasn't a family weekend away or a holiday or a trip. As a matter of fact, the first recollection we had of a family holiday was when I was 13, which, already being a teenager, without tarring everybody with the same brush, by that age, kids don't want to be with their parents anymore. They've got their friend network and they're starting to grow unattached at that point in time. So if there is a thing to highlight as an area that even my dad has looked back and said he wishes he could change, it would have been more quality family time, because the focus at the time was paying off the mortgage, food on the table, paying school fees and all the important stuff, right? It's, you know, they're the fundamentals, and that's what they were brought up with or without, and they wanted to pay it forward to our generation. So you can't discredit that approach. But again, hindsight is a very powerful thing. So looking back, that would have been the dial that they would have turned to put more time into. So quality time with the family, and it does guide me today.
In fact, I was going to say, often people either follow in the footsteps of the examples that have been set for them, or they specifically choose a different path. You've got a young family. Which way have you gone?
Well, I think I've swung both directions, actually, Mark. And you and I have known each other for a period of time. And I did find myself in my earlier years, or I guess the foundation years of wanting to establish a career, whether it's in financial services or more specifically general insurance, I've always found that the strong work ethic came through first. I wanted to make a great impression, lay a great foundation, and make sure that I cemented myself in whatever role or company or segment that I was in at the time. With that comes sacrifice, because there's not enough hours in the day to carry it all. And I would have to say that in my, you know, my first 5 to 8 years of being in the industry, I probably did do what my parents did and followed in their footsteps, worked hard. The mindset of paying off the mortgage, putting food on the table and establishing a career that later in life I would be able to spend more time with family was what my first endeavor was. And it was only probably when it came to the precipice of it being unbalanced, you know, wildly unbalanced, that, you know, the family time wasn't a priority anymore. And it was made apparent to me that was the case. I really had to go on a bit of a self-reflection journey to make sure that I was doing it for the right reasons, for the right people. Turns out I was probably doing it for myself rather than others. And that has made a real fundamental shift in the way that I look at things now. I still consider myself a hard worker. I find the hours of the day that I can do that don't impact the family side of things.
Do you think that has come with the development of your experience? If you had your time over, do you think you would have had the opportunity of doing it when you were trying to start a career as opposed to now that you're where you are?
That is actually a really powerful question, because I do feel that the approach and mindset evolves. It does evolve with you, and it does depend where people are in their life cycle, right? So I do feel that some of the networking, relationships, education and experience that I built during those years of where I probably put in the extra hours compared to the next person next to me has put me in a position or allowed me to, you know, be in a situation where I can start to pull that lever, make that change, and dedicate more time to the family. So it is hard to comment on whether or not if I did that back then, would I be where I am now, or would I have the knowledge and experience? It is hard to say, because my feedback to anybody coming into the industry is it is great to make an impression, to work hard and establish yourself well. Or a phrase that I picked up along the way was that building political capital will serve you well down the track, but it is hard to build the political capital without that above and beyond effort. So if I had my time again, I'd manage it better. I'd have an awareness of what impact it has on the people around me more. And that awareness is probably what I didn't have. I was oblivious to it at that time. So I would manage it better. I'd still work hard though.
And I guess it takes me to my next question, which is around thinking of someone who was a major influence in your younger years. What were the sort of traits in those people that you admired?
Having the small family and the rest of my, you know, my environment around me being friends and schoolmates and things like that, it probably did revolve around family. So, you know, it did revolve around, you know, looking up to my parents and knowing how hard they were doing it at the time and the effort that they put in to support us. So I probably looked at my dad and mum as those influential people in my life, of having a rational head on their shoulders, not being overly emotional about things, and having an early understanding of how the world works. I remember, you know, my dad, who's hasn't had a, you know, sort of a sophisticated job or you know, needing to, you know, manage relationships that much. He was always someone that was quite grounded when it came to challenges in life. And rather than getting worked up emotionally, he would allow me to take on the perspective of the other person in the equation. And he gave that to me at an early age. So, you know, at an early age, I would have to say, you know, probably my dad as a guiding influence on how to carry yourself as a person, as an individual. From a career point of view, I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say this, but I consider one of my business and life mentors to be the host of the show of this podcast. So someone who was able to sort of cross that barrier of not only personal but professional guidance and mentoring, you were probably one of the first people that I saw in that light. Otherwise, I felt like I was a self-motivated individual.
Oh, I think you're always a self-motivated individual, mate. If I made any difference to you, I think it would only have been marginal. I think, you and I have spent many, many years together talking about career and career development. You didn't need a hell of a lot of push, I got to say, which is awesome. I wanted to ask you about the fact that, you know, with your background, your grandfather and your father were both hardworking in that sort of labor type market. Was that one of the reasons why you chose the sort of office type situation?
Yes and no. I think that even through, you know, brutal honesty, my parents didn't want me to be headed down that path, that they saw the toll that it takes on the body. They saw the toll that it can take on, you know, not being able to provide for your family at times. And their guidance to me was always to be focused on school, education, and to be able, you know, for the next generation to do better. You know, sort of labor work or hands-on work was something that was probably, yeah, seen as a negative in the household without me even knowing it at the time. I was constantly guided to, you know, academia and, you know, working with my mind rather than my hands. So that was probably their endeavor for me. So I never really had an attraction to that industry and always wanted, you know, to follow their lead and their guidance. If someone that you trust and respect says to you, don't do what I do, I'm doing this for you, have a look at it this way, you do tend to have that lens on for some of the more influential years of your life, particularly when you're studying towards something. There's a lot of pressure on teenagers to start making decisions on their career at a very young age. They don't know what they want at the time. However, they're told to choose their path, pick their studies accordingly, because your career is going to be mapped out for you at the ripe old age of 14 or 15. So I always considered that I'd probably be in more of an office or administrative type of role just due to that influence at an early age. But I certainly wouldn't have shied away from a business opportunity if it came down that field. I was just never influenced or guided that way at a younger age. I do remember having conversations with my parents, even at a younger age, you know, even as a teenager, when you're starting to learn what maturity is, they always had a rational and level-headed approach to everything. You know, even though as a 13-year-old, you think the world's ending when something happens in your friendship circle, they were able to allow me to understand the perspective of the other individual or the other person in that equation and really take the heat out of it. So even at a young age, I felt like I was given that, you know, wise perspective of having a look at it from another lens and bringing you back to a level and rational place. And I think that for those reasons, when I look at what influence or exposure or experience I got that developed me into the person I am today, I'd have to say to be, you know, mum and dad and probably more particularly dad, who just always had that level head and just, you know, was able to treat every situation as it was and to take other people's perspective on it and to not be heated and not be irrational. So I think he was a really sort of guiding force and guiding light from that perspective. And that has probably allowed me to, you know, be the relationship builder that I am now because of that ability to find a common ground, to understand where other people are coming from. So I'd have to say that, you know, he'd be one of the more or most influential people in my life in the younger years, for sure.
So that decision to not follow in his footsteps, was that a difficult one for you? When I say following his footsteps, I mean from a work perspective, right? Concreter, bricklayer, that sort of environment.
It wasn't a hard decision because of the clear line of sight that he and my mum and my broader family gave me that wasn't something that they wanted for me. There are parents who want their kids to follow in their footsteps, and I would love for my two kids to follow in mine. I'm proud of it, and I think that you can accomplish quite a bit in the industry that we're in, which I'm sure that we'll talk a bit more about. But it was quite the opposite in our household, where it was quite adamant that wasn't a desire for me to follow in their footsteps. And as a matter of fact, you know, based on their experience, they were heavily guiding and influencing me to not be in the labor industry and wanted me to focus on school, to use my mind to be able to build a career and a life for myself. So I never felt all that my family even wanted me to, really. And if anything, I had the constant reassurance, pat on the back and vote of confidence from my family as I performed well academically, because that's what they wanted for me. So no, never really felt bad about it. And if anything, was constantly given the positive reinforcement that I'm doing the right thing by not.
And so you then, once you finished school, you decided to move into financial planning.
Well, I did a period of time in call centers, which really thickens the skin, I can promise you.
Yes, I've done that. So why financial planning? What was the attraction there?
If we look back at my education, I actually started a double degree in electronic engineering and computer science because technology was something that fascinated me and I found myself gravitating towards that. But again, to my brief point earlier about not really truly knowing what you want at a younger age until you start to experience it, doing 3 to 30 hours in a lab coding networks and things like that just really didn't resonate with my social side of things. And I found that course or that degree wasn't where I wanted to go. And you know, at the ripe old age of 18, I had to really think about what I do love, what I'm good at, and what I think I can extrapolate and build a career and a life out of. And it was numbers. You know, mathematics and finance was something that I was quite good at and came natural to me. So I actually transitioned into a Bachelor of Finance. And at that time, I started to explore what avenues were going to be the one that I could build a life around, build a career around. And at the time, it was actually build my own business around. You know, it is one that you can start to build a business of your own. And to our point earlier about leaving a legacy or something that you want your kids to be able to jump on, and if they enjoy it as well, there was, it ticked that box as well. So financial planning was one that was in my lane of studies and academia, something that I enjoyed, had the ability to build your own thing, and was something that was, you know, forever evolving and learning. So that challenge was always there as well. So I thought to myself, I could do that for the next 30 or 40 years. That sounds like a great pathway to take. So that was the decision-making process that went into starting down that path.
So I then met you when you were at the Commonwealth Bank in financial planning. You decided to join ANZIF, and I met you at ANZIF. The two careers, if you think about it, are poles apart. One's sort of working with that client base and doing all that sort of jazz from a, let's call it a retail perspective. The other one's moving into an insurance industry that, quite frankly, you probably only had a little bit of an inkling into. What was the catalyst for that?
So looking back at that time, the journey that took me to ANZIF from financial planning was due to the fact that at the particular time of financial planning, it was right in the heart of the global financial crisis as well. So it was 2007, 2008, a very, very difficult time for clients. What didn't change for me as a financial planner was that I enjoyed delivering results or protecting my clients. And I liked having that direct relationship with clients because there's just nothing like looking after them. So during the GFC, what ended up happening was that, you know, wealth management and funds under management became a real difficult and challenging time for everybody because markets were crashing globally and there were very difficult conversations being had. But what it did is it really heightened the understanding and exposure of protecting yourself. And one major part of what a financial planner does is actually provide life insurance recommendations and options. And here is the segue, because I found myself being quite successful in gravitating towards the life insurance part of what I did as a financial planner. It was quite rewarding, particularly if there was a claim or if a client needed to claim on their life insurance policy, or not life insurance policy, that's a bad example, but if they had an injury or income replacement and things like that. So I started to gravitate towards that and actually became quite passionate about it as well. And that was my first real, at risk of using a cliche and throwaway word, love for insurance, because of that protective nature and the feeling of looking after a client in that manner. So life insurance then became a bit of a strength during that difficult time in the financial planning world. And as I got to learn life insurance more and I learned about personal accident, and it then started to stem into the general lines of insurance, the door then opened to want to explore that further. And that's when the journey took me to ANZIF, just through an opportunity to really reinforce the life and financial planning arm. The F in ANZIF is what we used to call it when we were there. We were trying to put the F back in ANZIF. And it was the perfect segue because I did have my experience and enthusiasm for financial planning and life insurance, but it was really a two-way appreciation where ANZIF were delighted to, you know, have me on board to drive the financial side, services side of it. At the same time, they were aware of the fact that I had a thirst for learning the general insurance side, and they were more than happy to accommodate me learning, you know, that part of their business as well, and really getting a feel for the general insurance of insurance. And again, it's not that I fell into it, because I probably made a decided effort to get into insurance once I knew what it was and had an exposure to it. But once I got a true exposure to general insurance and general insurance lines, that's where I had a real passion for wanting to move into that space. So ANZIF was that true conduit into where I am today.
And, you know, there's quite an understandable view that financial planning is far sexier than general insurance. I would think so, right? Because if you think about it, you're dealing with stock markets, you're dealing with investments, you're dealing with all these sorts of things. I just wonder whether, from a general insurance perspective, how you found transitioning from that sort of well-known industry to an industry that, quite frankly, we're quite misunderstood and we're not well-known. How did you go with doing that?
You make a very, very valid point. It is very misunderstood in regards to what it has to offer, both career and insurance, as well as an understanding of what it delivers on. But I think from a personality and a trait point of view, the reason that it resonated with me is that financial planning might be seen you know, by those not in the know as being sexy because you are dealing in wealth and money and things like that. And there could be more decimal points and commas potentially if that's the way that you want to look at it. But it actually can be quite a solo gig. It can be quite a lonely gig where you can be just working by yourself. There might be an assistant or a paraplanner helping you there, and you do your own thing, and you're sitting in your little office 38 hours of the week, not really engaging much except with a few clients, and then you're writing some reports. But where general insurance grabbed me was not only does it have the financial accounting and risk management side, which really sort of tweaked my interest, but it is still an absolute relationship game, right? So you need to have that social element. You need to be able to engage with people on all levels, be it C-suite, you know, middle management, workers, mums, dads, kids. It has it all. You can pick your avenue, you can pick your pathway. And on top of that, it ticks all of the boxes of that financial element, that learning something new every week element. And the sexy side of general insurance, you know, it really is undersold, because the point of engaging with, you know, big industry, little industry, you know, big client, small client, there is never a dull moment. And I can promise you that sitting in your little office as a financial planner, there are plenty of dull moments. So, you know, I hope there's not too many financial planners that are listening to this, and I hope they have a very engaging workplace. But it can be tough, and it's not as engaging. I think it is most certainly, to your point, misunderstood as to what forms a day in the life of an insurance person.
So let's talk a little bit about that, because you're not just an insurance person. You started in the insurance education field. Then you migrated to insurance companies. Then you've been able to move into brokerages, and both suburban, mid-size, and now you're a WTW, which is a global brokerage. How have you found the transition, Kirk?
I guess that talks to my earlier point about the fact that there are so many pathways and avenues that insurance can take you through. It doesn't necessarily need to be writing an insurance policy or providing that policy to a client. It could be in the education side of it. It could be in the financial side of it. It could be in the claims side of it as well. So the transition has, in my mind, quite a large foundation that is highly transferable across all the different segments of what the insurance industry is made up of. You know, so for instance, you know, transferring from life insurance over to general insurance, there was the personal accident element, which probably is that crossover. So you've got an understanding of life risk, you've got an understanding of the risk management that comes with that, so you can transfer into personal accident and sickness, and now you're in the general insurance space from life, so you've got that fundamental. Then if you talk about moving from, you know, education into an underwriter, which is I went to a large insurer at the time, having an understanding of the education framework on what an individual needed to know to be able to deliver in their role in that capacity allowed me to, due to my exposure to the education framework, know exactly what questions I needed to be asking, what results the insurer needed to deliver on. We were helping them train their staff for their own careers. So there was a lot of knowledge transfer, you know, knowledge that was transferable to the role. Where I think the absolute common ground is, if we're taking out education and we're taking out technical, it's about people. So find myself forever coming back to the fact that I believe that I can go into a new role or a new area of insurance confidently because I can engage who I need to engage for what I need to engage to be successful in that role, if that makes sense. So it is still a people game.
And, you know, during your career, have you had many mentors over your journey?
It's actually something that I think is highly important in our industry, probably more now than ever, seeing as we have quite a talent gap in the insurance industry at the moment. And that gap will only widen unless people who have the experience put their hand up to find some time to bring through the graduates, to bring through young people who perhaps don't know where they want to go in the future. And insurance is on the list, but they need that, not that nudge, but they just need that guide or that influence to say, what more can I do? What don't I know? Because we could potentially be losing some fantastic grads or young people who do a couple of years, fall into insurance, but actually fall back out before they make a career out of it. So I think more now than ever, do we need a high level of mentorship in our industry. I've been fortunate that the one or two that I've, you know, sought advice and guidance from have actually been, you know, longstanding mentors and people who have stayed in my life outside of the company that I work for. So it hasn't just been a company-driven one. It's been something that you know, sort of transcends where you're working. So I've been fortunate not to have too many, but it's something that I think is an important factor for both young and new people to the insurance, but also for people wanting to take that next step. You can quite quickly find yourself with the years melting away and you're in a role that you're potentially not sure where you want to go next, but you don't know who to talk to. And I think, you know, having the awareness of the capacity of others around you to have that conversation in a circle of trust type of fashion where you can sort of lay it all to bear as to how you feel about things, I think that's crucially important for the development of that individual and for our industry as a whole.
We're speaking with Kirk Populin, who's a Broking Director, Property and Casualty at WTW. Kirk, you know this show is called Business Made Personal. So we've spoken a little bit about the business. Let's talk a little bit more about the personal, if you don't mind. Let's talk about challenges for a bit, mate. What would you say has been the hardest challenge that you faced to date in your life, be it work or personal?
If we are happy to sort of lay it all bare and be raw about it, the biggest challenge that I had, we may have briefly mentioned it in the beginning of the conversation, was striking that balance between work and home life. I kind of skirted around the fact earlier in the podcast about the challenge that I had in finding that balance, and I needed to have a moment of self-reflection to decide on what I wanted to do. That was probably the biggest challenge for me and probably one of the closest things to a major failure in my life that has occurred. And that was that I wasn't spending enough time with the family and it was starting to put that at risk. So there was a moment in time when it came down to the point of you know, almost choosing your career over your family. And when you think about it like that in black and white, the decision should be quite easy, right? You know, you've got a family and that's what should come first. But you can quite easily be blinded by the positive reactions that you're getting at work. You can be really sort of riding the wave of your career that is growing and it's on this upward trajectory and you sort of got a rocket strapped to you and you're getting all these feel-good moments for the 50, 60-hour work week that you're doing. And what ends up happening is you come home to a frustrated family and you're like, I feel better at work because they're giving me the pat on the bum that I wanted when I needed it. It's tougher at home, so should I just be spending more time at work? And it does become that spiral of, you know, work becomes everything. You bury yourself in it and you neglect what is actually happening around you. And it quite easily blinds you to everything else that's happening around you because work becomes that thing that you need to keep you going. So I would most absolutely say that in my life, professionally and personally, you know, one of the biggest challenges was recognizing the signs, taking that breath, taking that step back and saying, right, okay, priorities, where are they? What are they? How do I manage both? And how do I do both effectively? And it's not an easy job. And to your point about mentors, couldn't have got through it without mine. So, you know, highly recommend that people talk to people about that. If they've had experiences similar, that they speak to somebody else, because you might be the best problem solver in your job, but you don't know how to handle, you know, a personal side of things if you've never experienced it before, and somebody else might. So always reach out. Always have that network that you can talk to.
It's that sort of tension between the dynamic and the mundane, and I'm not saying your family life's mundane, but it is a bit like Groundhog Day, right? Whereas work, as you said before, never a dull moment. There's always things happening. And if you are energized by that sort of changing dynamic, you can see how that can happen, right?
And now I can, Mark, in hindsight, it is clear as day. But at the time, you're lost in it. That's a shout out to anybody who, you know, if anybody's feeling that way or wants to have a chat, I'm open to a conversation because I've experienced it and I am more than happy to pay it forward.
Yeah, brilliant. Kirk, let's talk a little bit about, you're obviously very well known now in the insurance cycles in a relatively short space of time. You've got a huge network, I know because I'm part of it. Given that exposure, how has it changed you personally?
I feel as if the exposure to the network has allowed me to navigate things more efficiently or more effectively. And the reason I say that as a positive thing is that before, when we were just talking now about managing, you know, both worlds of your life or both hemispheres and trying to be effective in both, that the best way to do that is through efficient navigation of your life. You know, is there a smarter, not harder way to do things? And what having a network of people around you allows you to do is that you don't necessarily need to be in the know on everything. But what is fantastic is if you've got a network that has somebody that is an expert in that area or can give you an example of expertise in that area. So I think having that broader network that you can call on for that allows you to be more effective in your career, firstly, because we're talking about my insurance network. But it also means that I can trust and rely on the output of that network to support me and what I need to do, because it's a two-way street. You know, I look to support them as much as I can as well. So I think that what time and relationships allow you to do is to just be more effective, because you've got people who are able to be around you that can give you that support. And I think that that's what has allowed me to grow at a really strong and consistent rate in the industry.
And just thinking about that a little bit further and sort of piggybacking off something you said before around the whole work-life balance thing, given what you've been through and you know, it sounded pretty raw to me, what have you changed to help you in that work-life space? What have you started doing differently now that you weren't doing before that's made a difference for you?
I think I might have only briefly mentioned it before, but it was about finding the time that I need to do those extra hours or to work on something that, you know, makes me go above and beyond for my role, but it now doesn't impact my family time. That's the big change for me. And look, credit to the companies that I have worked for and WTW as well, that the silver lining or potentially one of the positive impacts of going through the pandemic a couple of years ago has opened up that conversation on flexibility, yeah, which comes with its perils as well as its positives. But what it has meant for me on a more specific level is that it's very rare now that I'll be sitting at my desk in the office at 7 p.m. or 7:30 p.m., which is what I was doing on a very frequent basis years ago. What it does mean now is that I'm on a 5 o'clock train, dinner with the family. You know, I've got two young kids, so the sort of the dinner, bath and bed routine is something that is precious to me. As crazy as that time is at night in a household, it is precious, and it means that I'm there for that quality time that I spoke about with my parents, which potentially was lacking. And I would hope to think that my kids don't think that I'm just always off at work, because when it matters and when I can be, I'm there with them. And then if there is to be an hour or a couple of hours work that needs to happen, it'll be once they're in bed, quickly get that done, and then back to normal life again. So just having that flexibility of picking the hours of the day that I'm able to go that extra mile for work when needed, and it's not always needed. It's good that the balance has come back into the industry. But having that flexibility has changed things for me. I'm happy to do that extra hour or two that I need to for my job. That drives me anyway. But the fact that I'm not sacrificing family time means the world.
Do you think employer expectations have changed? Because if I go back in my career, there was an expectation from an employer perspective that, yes, you would put in the hard yards and you wouldn't go home until the job got done. And yes, you would rock up at 6 a.m. because you had the work to do, right?
I truly do think employer expectations have changed. I think that there's been a real recognition of what the slowdown during COVID did to people and the change in mindset that it brought to people about the importance of family. The difficult thing for an employer is to manage that trust circle that you have with your team, because, you know, when you're talking about a company like WTW, you know, you're talking about thousands of employees. So how do you make sure that they're all in the circle of trust, that flexibility still comes with work ethic and you're still doing the job that you need to do at a productive level? So I think that's the challenge that employers are facing at the moment. It's making sure that they're able to balance that productivity versus flexibility. In my circle and in the people I work with and my family and friends, the hard work doesn't stop. We want to succeed and we're motivated and we're ambitious. All it has done for us is it's allowed us to manage the hours of the day that we do it in so that we can be balanced and happier in our home life. So I'm sort of forever appreciative of these changes, and I do truly think that employers have changed. However, the challenge of understanding that flexibility versus productivity is a cloud over it. And there'd be some organizations or even management teams that would not know how to manage that well, and how they navigate the next 2 to 5 years is going to be interesting, because it does appear that it's potentially here to stay, but managing it needs to have a new outlook, a new perspective, and that's still in its infancy, I think.
I've got a couple of final questions for you, Kirk Populin, before we let you go. I'm going to give you a magic wand, my friend, and with that magic wand, you can change anything you like about the insurance industry. What is it that you would change?
I guess we're always going to gravitate towards what's impacting us directly at the moment. I think that I would want to change, how do we impact the resourcing of the industry at the moment? So at the moment, I do feel as if people are working hard because they're probably stretched a little bit thinner. That talent gap that we mentioned a little bit earlier is widening. We're in a resource-stricken market in general, not just insurance, but across all industries. I know that everyone's feeling the pinch, but I think if we were to wave the magic wand, it would be to, you know, highlight the career in insurance better, to guide the education into it better, to close that gap of talent in an industry that should be thriving. It really should be thriving. It's an industry that's gone through a pandemic that impacted so many people and so many industries, yet from an insurance point of view, it really was barely a blip on the radar because we were able to pivot, be agile, we're able to be there for customers at a difficult time. What's the old saying? It's death and taxes will always exist. I feel like you need to add insurance onto that mix. It is a very stable environment that is very rewarding. So I think if we were to wave the magic wand, it would be to have, you know, a fully resourced industry that is passionate about what they do, that is helping customers and is being innovative in the face of a fairly challenging time still in insurance. It's still quite a hard market and it's tough on customers at the moment. So, you know, through that increased resource, we might eke out some more innovation and be able to help our customers better. So more bums on seats is my magic wand swish.
The other question I have for you is, if you were able to go back and speak to that 13-year-old young Kirk Populin, what would you say to him?
It would be to, you know, probably to treasure the moments with family a little bit more as well. I think that, you know, when we're discussing about, you know, the tough time and parents working quite hard, it did mean that timing was potentially lost and there wasn't a lot more of it as we got older. Because as we got older, you know, you start a part-time job at 14, 15 and you become a young man and you move on and upwards. So I think, yeah, as a young person coming through, it's don't let the pressure of what, you know, expectation being put on you get to you. Still enjoy who you are and where you are in your life. Remember family, remember friends. They're going to be there for the longer term. So don't be too hard on yourself. There's, you know, there's always a way through. And taking a breath can be one of the best things that you'll ever do for yourself.
If I asked you to describe yourself in 5 words or less, what 5 words would encapsulate Kirk Populin?
I'd like to consider myself a passionate person. So whenever I believe in something, I don't tend to get into many arguments that I don't think I'm going to win. And sometimes that works against me. I'm passionate about what I do. I'm passionate about my job, my work, my industry, my family. I think that I'm engaging. I think that one of my strengths is building rapport and building strong relationships with those around me. So that would be something that I'd probably consider myself to be. Confident, I say that with a wry smile because anybody who does know me and might be listening to this might laugh that that's something that I should underdo a little bit sometimes. But yep, confident. I'd like to think that I'm caring. And this probably comes down to the fact that one of the other reasons that I jumped working with an insurer to being a broker is that I actually wanted to work with clients again. I wanted to work with the end client because I care about them. And that was something that drove me when I was a financial planner as well. So I'd like to think that I'm a caring individual as well. And the last one, which is a hyphenated word, which is something that I had to focus on some time ago, is to be family oriented. I think that they're, you know, they're everything to me and they are forever. So I'd consider myself a family oriented man as well. I think that was 5.
Mate, thank you so much for being on Business Made Personal. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, as you know, and that was even more special. So thank you for being with me.
Very gracious to be here, Mark. Thank you for the invitation. It means a lot.
Thank you so much for lending us your ears. Please remember to click follow on your podcast app or subscribe at bmppodcast.com.au so we can give you a sneak peek of our next guest. Until next time, I'm Mark Silvera, and you've been listening to Business Made Personal.